and welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope with Rodney Mathers. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. Lisa Espich is on the show today, and Lisa's got some great advice for ex-offenders. You're going to want to be sure and stay tuned. And we're going to get to it right after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on The Journey of Hope. Right here on the Journey of Hope, we have Darcy Keith, we have Pastor Donnell Morgan, who did some time in Angola, and he's got some interesting stories. We also have Ellen Allen coming up in about 2 or 3 weeks. Lots of good stuff coming up for ex-offenders right here on the Journey of Hope. Everybody, and welcome back. We have on the phone with us today Lisa Espich. Lisa has written a book called Soaring Above Co-Addiction. She is dedicated to helping families deal with the effects of addiction. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rodney. Thanks for having me.
First thing is, how about you give us a little bit of background about yourself and let us know where you're coming from as you've written this book.
Okay. I've been married to my husband for 24 years, and through most of those, probably the first almost 2 decades of our marriage, my husband struggled with addiction. It progressively, you know, graduated from one drug to the next, but pretty much for the majority of that time, he was addicted to alcohol, crack cocaine, and prescription pain pills. And throughout the process of being married to somebody with addiction, I fell into my own patterns of what I learned later is codependency and enabling. Mm-hmm. And it was really once I hit my own rock bottom, which was much later into our marriage, that I realized I wasn't being successful in saving my husband. Everything that I tried to do to save him was failing. And I finally started to put a focus on myself and getting myself healthy and moving forward. And what I discovered when I started doing that is that everything started to shift. Mm-hmm. And through the process of getting myself healthy, I was able to help create an atmosphere that promoted my husband finally accepting help. And he did eventually accept treatment. He's now been clean for almost 6 years, and we are now enjoying a healthy marriage. And I ended up writing a book about my experience because I knew that some of the things that I did could help others to help their family heal, and that there really is, I had reached a point where I felt it was hopeless, and now I know that people can get well from addiction, that there is recovery, and that you can move forward.
I think there's probably a lot of people listening that have a loved one that has had addiction go so far out of control that it took their freedom from them. And you know that we deal with ex-offender issues here on the program, Lisa. And I think a lot of people would like to know a good definition of what co-addiction is. What is it that you mean by that?
Well, what I see as being co-addiction and what I saw myself doing, and it's common with any family that has a loved one struggling with addiction, is that the family members, the loved ones, the spouse, parents, whatever it is, tend to get stuck in their own negative patterns that end up helping to enable the addiction. And even though we may not see that's what we're doing, having been through it now and being able to see the things that I had done in the past, I now see that I was helping to enable his addiction. So even though I insisted I didn't want him using drugs, and of course I, you know, begged and pleaded for him to get better, and I did all these things that I thought were helping, what I actually was doing was staying stuck in the addiction with him, and I actually became a partner in this addiction without knowing it. So I was helping to hide things for him. I was helping keep the secret. I was helping, you know, protecting the addiction, actually, because I didn't want people on the outside to know what was going on. And so I ended up getting caught up in all the secrets and lies and chaos alongside my husband. And what I found happens is that when you start getting caught up in those secrets and those lies and the hiding, the addiction, it's hard to get out of that cycle. And I went through years and years of being stuck in that pattern, and it was very scary to get myself out of that and to finally open up with people outside of my household as to what was going on so that I could get myself help. And that's what I see as co-addiction is as a family member, even though you don't have an addiction of your own, you get caught up in that cycle along with the addict, and you actually do help to keep it strong.
How does that differ from this term we always hear, enabling? I mean, is it the same thing you're talking about there?
Yeah, it is. I mean, enabling is really, when I think back to my life with my husband, you know, there was a point where I actually took over all of the finances because he was no longer trustworthy with money. But even though I had the money in my possession, I still was handing him the money for the drugs. I still, you know, he would either scare me to give it to him or, you know, break down and get depressed to the point that I would finally give him the money for the drugs. But I was still enabling him by giving him that money. I was enabling him by keeping the secret so that if he called out sick, I was calling in for him and lying to his boss. And all of those things that help keep them on that same cycle that they're in. And I think as family members, we do that because we're trying to protect ourselves as well. If my husband lost his job, where does that leave me? So I got stuck in helping to protect his job. Mm-hmm. You know, all of these things that we do, you know, trying for our own survival as well. But, you know, what I realize now is that for many, many years, I helped keep it going by enabling, and that's what it is. And I now know I could have taken steps sooner. Unfortunately, I didn't know or wasn't strong enough at the time, but I now know.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, Lisa, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to find out how you finally broke away from the enabling. And I noticed in your blog you talk about how to let go of a loved one when they're spinning out of control. And I'd like to talk about that. We're going to do that right after this. My name's Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. But me said you never come back, but here you are again. Cause we belong together now. Yeah. Forever united here somehow. Yeah. You got a piece of me. Hey, y'all, this is Rodney Mathers for the Jam Buddy Chord Chart. You know, a lot of you have taken up music as a way to be productive during your downtime, and I want to tell you about a product out there that can help you with your playing. It's called the Jam Buddy Chord Chart, and the way it works is, now, if you play piano, guitar, mandolin, bass, no matter what it is you play, it teaches you something called the Nashville Numbering System. And with this system, you'll be able to play a lot of songs in a lot of different keys. And it's just really hard to explain. So what you need to do is you need to go to angiesbanjo.com. That's angiesbanjo.com, and click on the link for the Jam Buddy Chord Chart ebook. And you're going to get a free sample when you do that, so you can see how great this thing is. It's called the Jam Buddy Chord Chart, and it's at angiesbanjo.com, the Jam Buddy Chord Chart. And welcome back to the Journey of Hope. We're chatting today with Lisa Espich. She's written a book called Soaring Above Co-Addiction. And before the break, I told Lisa that we were going to tackle this tough question here about letting a loved one go. And so, Lisa, I'm assuming there's a point at which the enabling has to stop, and you have to just let go of someone that you love, even though they're spinning out of control. It's got to be extremely difficult. Talk to us about that.
Relationship, I had reached my own, you know, rock bottom when I came home one night and my husband's drug dealer was outside of our home, and it was more than I could take. He was in his car, and I ended up chasing his drug dealer throughout my neighborhood streets and confronting him. And, you know, at the time, I was just so angry, and I know it wasn't a smart thing to do, but I just was desperate, and I wanted to confront this drug dealer. In the end, it didn't make any difference. He still continued to sell drugs to my husband. And for me, that was a turning point. I, that night, ended up pulling out a journal and really trying to decide, how did I get where I am now and how do I get out of this? And I started making a detailed plan to get myself out of the situation, which included things about taking care of me, exercising, eating right, doing journaling, starting to go to 12-step recovery meetings, all those things to get myself healthy. And through the process of that, I was able to get the strength to set healthy boundaries and to not get caught up in my husband's chaos anymore. And that's really what the letting go is about. It's not about stopping loving this person, because, I mean, let's face it, we love these people in our lives and we want desperately for them to get well. But unfortunately, it's such a difficult disease and illness. You know, sometimes we end up doing the wrong things to help. And what I found is, by taking care of myself and by putting myself first and the rest of my family first, and setting healthy boundaries, That's really what the letting go was about. And through doing that, my husband started to come around and admit that he needed help. And that was the beginning point of the recovery for our family. But the letting go is, you know, it's a trial and error, and it's a process, because as families, we're stuck in patterns that are really hard to get out of. We're used to doing the same things over and over, the arguing, the chaos. And it's very uncomfortable as you start to make those changes. So sometimes it takes baby steps, and you have to forgive yourself when you do the wrong things. But if you start taking those steps to put those boundaries up and not let the addict cross those, that's the beginning step.
Well, then I guess the next step would be to get the loved one into treatment. And I know from personal experience that can be an almost impossible task. How did you go about doing that, and what advice would you have for people that are listening that may have a loved one that needs to go back into treatment in order to save their life and to keep from going back to prison? How would you address that?
Well, I found for us, and you know, we learned this through trial and error as well. First of all, it's not easy. Most insurance plans don't cover any real long-term treatment. I know for us, our insurance only covered 24 to 72 hours of detox, and anybody dealing with addiction knows that that's not going to do anything to really help your loved one. Mm-hmm. And so what I started doing is preparing for the time when my husband would be ready. And so before he finally surrendered himself, I worked with family to find a treatment program, to figure out the finances, to have that plan in place, so that when he was finally ready to accept help, there wasn't a delay. Because what we had found in the past is there were times he said he was ready, but by the time we made some sort of plan, he had changed his mind or backed out or got too fearful. So what helped us is finally having a plan in place so that we all knew when he said he was ready, we just jumped on it.
Oh, and yeah. We
had a bed ready for him from talking to that treatment center, and we were ready to go. And mm-hmm. That's probably one of the biggest tips I would give to families, is at least start making a plan so that when and if they are ready, there's no delay. Because that delay, even a couple hours, is sometimes enough for them to back out. The other thing is we did end up getting help from our treatment program with an intervention. And I would, you know, strongly suggest that that's something that can be arranged. It's really important to have that outside person that is not going to be so emotional with the family. It's you don't want an intervention to end up being a confrontation, but so many times it does end up being argumentative and confronting when there's not that outsider to kind of help keep things smooth and free of those high emotions.
Mm-hmm. Well, you bring up a lot of excellent points. I think there are a lot of people that got some good tips from the kinds of things that you have to say today. Lisa, just give us some general advice about dealing with a family member that has an addiction. What are some things that we can do? Just, I know you've been over some very detailed things, but just some general advice about dealing with family members that have addictions.
I think the number one thing, first of all, is make sure you're taking care of yourself as well. It's really easy when you have a family member struggling with addiction to get consumed with their problems. And so it's really no different than that whole analogy of when you're in an airplane and the oxygen mask comes down and you breathe first before you help your child. You have to be taking care of yourself and keeping yourself healthy. And I know that's easier said than done, but it's what I found to be really important. And it was one of the life-saving things for our family. The other thing is, learn what you can about addiction. We have so many myths and misunderstandings around addiction, and if you can start finding, there's so many things online to go on and learn about the specific addiction your loved one's dealing with, find out what's going on in their brain, why they're doing the things that they're doing, I found when I started understanding addiction and why my husband was acting the way he was acting, it took away a lot of the anger. So it made it easier to understand where he was coming from, have some forgiveness of why they're doing what they're doing, and look at it with some new eyes so that there's not so much anger involved in it.
You bring up a Well, I was going to say, you bring up a good point, Lisa. In a good treatment program, do they bring the family in to do counseling along with the addict?
Absolutely. I think that any treatment program that you find, one of the most important things is that the family is involved, because, I mean, the fact is it is a family disease. And you can, that loved one can go to treatment, but if the family that they've been dealing with doesn't learn some understanding of the mistakes they've made and the part that they've played in it, then that long-term sobriety is less likely to happen, because the addict is coming back to a lot of anger and people haven't learned how to forgive or understand. And so the whole recovery process and a long-term recovery, it's so important that the family be involved and be learning. And at the very least, the family should be involved in a 12-step program like Al-Anon, just so that they can understand. It's hard for families to understand that they have been playing a part, but it's more than likely, if you've been in a situation with an addict for any long-term period of time, you have learned patterns that you need to break as well. So that's an extremely important part of it.
What about in terms of the family being taught warning signs that a relapse is about to happen? Is that something that's a part of treatment as well?
Yeah. And I don't know that, you know, I know even for, you know, the treatment that we went through, that's the most challenging, is that, you know, unfortunately, the percentage of relapse is very high. And for many addicts, it takes multiple treatments to have sustained recovery. And so one of the hardest parts of addiction for families to accept and to learn is that relapse is very commonly a part of addiction, and it's a part of the recovery process. And it's really not likely that your loved one is going to be able to go through a treatment program once and then for the rest of their life have sustained recovery. It's possible, but it's more likely that they will probably have some struggles along the way or have a relapse. And there's a difference between, you know, having a slip and having a complete relapse. But absolutely, the families need to also be aware of those signs and learn things that they can do to help keep a full relapse from happening. So, you know, when your loved one is getting agitated, or, you know, there's always those signs that, you know, maybe there's a lot of stress going on. Mm-hmm. And so the family can learn tips and tools to help that loved one realize that, you know, they may be heading a wrong direction. And unfortunately, you know, relapse is a really big part of addiction. And when families understand that, you know, you can understand that just because somebody came out of treatment and they had a relapse doesn't mean, you know, there's no hope. It's a common thing to happen. And unfortunately, I think families need to know that.
Okay, Lisa, I wish we didn't have to stop there. I feel like we're just getting started. But Lisa Espich, the book is called Soaring Above Co-Addiction. Excellent, excellent information, Lisa. And I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Lisa,
and I'd like to say, if anybody wants to, I do have are you still there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I do have a blog at soaringabovecoaddiction.com. If families want to go on there, it's a continuing blog to help different articles to help families with this recovery process.
And how do we get a hold of your book, Lisa?
It's also available on my website at soaringabovecoaddiction.com, and it's available at anywhere books are sold, Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, and it's also available on all the ebook readers.
Thank you, Lisa. We'll be sure and provide links for everyone when we post the podcast. Thanks again for being here today. My name's Rodney Mathers.
Thanks for having me.
You're so welcome. My name's Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope.
Trying hard to reach out, but when I tried to speak out, felt like no one could hear me.
Hey, y'all, keep that email coming. You can catch me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. That's MathersRodney at yahoo.com. Drop me a line. Absolutely out of time. I want to thank my special guest today, Miss Lisa Espich, and I want to encourage you to go check out the things that she has on the internet. We've got the link up there next to the podcast. Go and do that. And I want to remind you of something. If God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on the Journey of Hope.